listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, March 29th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. As always, I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you, and thank you so much to those that have joined us live. We appreciate your contributions, and we appreciate the dynamic, you know, experience that we all get from this. I always look forward to it, and thanks to those that take the time to catch up with us in the archives. We appreciate your feedback as well. The Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. We'll begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So tonight, we're going to continue our topic from last week, which was so rudely interrupted. Had a bit of a power outage. So last week's topic, for those that may not have listened, was what defines right and wrong? And, you know, we talked about a lot of facets. I think, you know, one of the big takeaways was a matter of perspective and, you know, looking at things through a different lens. So, Dr. Vicki, I thought we'd start by kind of finishing the train of thought that we were on last week when we got cut off.
Good idea.
So, basically, we've been talking about perspective, what defines right and wrong in that avenue where you look at the same thing, but depending on where you're looking at it, what culture you're from, what the context is, you're going to view the same thing as either a right action or a wrong action, let alone the morality of it. And I referenced the example of Cyrus the Great, and he's the founder of the Persian Empire from 2,500 years ago. Very lenient in terms, you know, graded on a curve based on the context of the time, but very lenient, very tolerant. For many people in the Mesopotamian area, the Persians were a welcome relief, and they were the good guys. Cut to, of course, the Greek and Persian wars. The Greeks look at the Persians as, you know, the evil empire. But it's largely a matter of perspective. And you can make a good argument that the world is a layer of shades of gray, which kind of brought me to this quote that I'd got cut off on. It's from a movie, and basically it's a movie, Clear and Present Danger, with Harrison Ford, based on a book. In it, Harrison Ford's character is a CIA operative or analyst, what have you. He's basically finds out this plot that involves, you know, just some conspiracy, some corruption, and just rather immoral things. But they're doing it for the people doing it think they're in the right. He vows to expose it. One of the other people challenges him, says he's a Boy Scout. He doesn't understand the world is a series of shades of gray. You know, it's not all black and white. He turns around and has his famous Harrison Ford finger in front of him. He says, not black and white, right and wrong. And I always thought about that a lot, and I thought it was a good line. And I also thought about the fact that the world is a lot of shades of gray, but all gray is essentially a mix of black and white. So all of that gray is these just almost infinite series of actions that lead up to this mosaic. Different points where you have a moment between right and wrong. And again, that's a lot in a judgment call, but you know, I think there are a lot of things that are objective that we can't agree on.
Well, you know, we also went through the nine principles of belief and,
you know,
and really in context of daily life and how do you, you know, apply those nine principles when you're functioning and trying to get through the day and integrate that. And I think that, you know, black and white, right and wrong, it's really a matter of, I wish we were all on the same page spiritually. You know, it's like we're spiritual beings before we're human beings, and we're learning to be human, and we're learning to be better humans. And I think that that's what the nine principles of belief brings into play. But it's absolutely right. It's the perspective of, you know, what defines right and wrong. You know, every religious group, every country, you know, every group thinks that they're in the right when they're, you know, going for a cause. It goes right down to families, workplaces, and so on. And, you know, one of the things that Michael and I had mentioned before the program, and I thought, you know, that kind of fits, is the Dunning-Kruger effect. And that simply is something that occurs when a person's lack of knowledge and skills in a certain area cause them to overestimate their own competence. You see? So there's a lot of people, and we see this online all the time, where people have a small bit of information and they think that that encompasses the bigger picture and they're right. But what's the fallout? You know, it's what's the consequence of that one thing that you hang on to? You think that's the right thing for you in the whole world, but there's all these other variables.
Mm-hmm. You know? Absolutely.
And if you're not thinking about the variables, then where is the right and wrong? And I think that this is the dilemma that really we have in the world right now, is whether you're a Christian, a Muslim, a Jew, you know, and those are the primaries, and they get down to this Jehovah's Witnesses, Seventh-day Adventists, and, you know, we can break it down to, you know, a myriad of religions that believe their dogma is the right one, and then it's somehow skewed into a privilege, you know, or an entitlement. And I think that's where we go awry. And I think that's what Dr. Kelly has done so beautifully in the Nine Principles of Belief, is you take all those things out of the equation. You know, I watched a video today on YouTube, Michael, and for the life of me, I can't remember what it was, so forgive me about that. But this fellow was investigating some AI information and how it translates art. And one of the things he wanted to do is see if the AI was somehow, there was an underlying current of religion. So he quoted a passage from the Bible that only said the word Jesus, that gave no other inference to the passage. And sure enough, it brought up this whole portrait of, you know, Jesus and his disciples and all these other people in boats and the water. And it had this translation. And I thought, wow, are we in that kind of a time where there's a bias in AI? And you know, could that really be something where that bias influences the right or wrong and where we're moving in the future when it comes to artificial intelligence even? So this is a real dilemma, I think, that we have in our societies, and that's a plural, and, you know, because everybody comes from their own reality, you know, of what defines right and wrong.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's why the first principle of belief, do no harm, do right, is a wonderful principle, but we also have to recognize the requirement of kind of a spiritual awareness and evolution and an empathy, because if you don't have a bedrock of what defines right in terms of, at least in the most objective senses, you know, don't kill, don't steal, don't rape, don't take from somebody something that you don't have a right to. I think we can all agree on those things, and I think we can agree in doing what is right for the wider world and life in general, I think is something we can agree to as metaphysicians. But if we can agree to these things, then we can get to the point of, well, what does that mean, do right? And in something that is so, you know, individual in that term of do right, you know, I mean, obviously we all know that the only, you know, the only authority on what is right and wrong is me, because my perspective, you know, should define all, and I think that that's just a given. But it is a complex world, and perspective matters a lot. And, you know, the Dunning-Kruger effect is, you know, a perfect example of that, because a lot of people think they're in the right. Nobody thinks they're the bad guy. You know, Jamil pointed out in chat, Thanos from the Marvel movies believed he was doing the right thing by eliminating half of all life. And, you know, I think absolutely, you know, the ends justify the means, right? There's always something that, you know, what's the term? It's on the tip of my tongue. If you have a rule, there's always an example that, you know, breaks the rule, but it's a uncommon thing, and I can't think of the phrase, but you know, in rare situations, perhaps the ends do justify the means, but those are exceedingly rare, I feel. If you have to go to dark means to get to an end, is that end worth it, and do you not lose something by reaching that, the, you know, that end? I would also point out that, you know, for the Dunning-Kruger effect, perfect. It reminds me of the phrase, you know, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Mm-hmm. And I always took that to mean, growing up, that knowledge in itself is dangerous in the sense that, you know, it can lead to harm and things like that. But it occurred to me, and it was explained somewhere that I read long ago, that it's context, that a little bit of knowledge, just a bit, is dangerous because you don't have the context or the full awareness on how to use that. And that was kind of an epiphany, you know, like 15, 20 years back. But it's, you know.
Well, one of the, you know, one of the greatest lessons my late teacher, you know, Frank taught me back in the 70s is, you know, what's a fact versus an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And fast forward these years, last week I had a talk with my oldest daughter, and I had kind of a proud moment, Michael, I got to tell you, because she said she wanted to try to figure out what it was that I imparted to my kids. She said, what you imparted to us that made us know who we are and, you know, that we're critical thinkers. And I said, fact versus opinion. Everything is a fact versus opinion. There's very few facts in the world. Everything is an opinion. And then if you look at natural law, natural consequence, you know, and of course, we think it's natural to pay a kid to take out the garbage. That's a decision. That's not natural. That's something that we make up.
Mm-hmm.
We integrate it into, you know, our life to think, well, you know, that's normal and it's the right thing to do. But you're perpetuating that everything comes with a reward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the most basic living skills has to be rewarded. And you know, I was a part of the self-esteem movement, you know, back in the 80s and the 90s, and I really believed in that empowerment. But what it did also was cause a generation of narcissists.
Yeah.
And you see, so it's that long-term thinking again about, you know, some things in some people's minds get taken too far. And, you know, when you take something too far, everything in its parts rather than in its whole effect. So that critical thinking, deductive reasoning, inductive reasoning, you know, how you come at something from many different sides to find out the best, you know, place for you and what is a truth. You know, really, what is a truth? If you can't look at something from many different perspectives and come up with a, you know, similar or equal conclusion, then you have to start over and say, mm-hmm, what I thought was wrong. And I think this is a part where people struggle with in our societies is we don't want to be wrong. You know, it's that, as Dr. Kelly would say, the I'm special syndrome. Because we live in such a competitive world, we want to be right, you know, and we want to, you know, have something and be somebody and make an impact and, you know, and but we lose something in that, which is that critical thinking and being able to realize that there are very few facts. Although flat earthers would disagree, the planet's round. You know, there is a moon, there is a sun. And even in science, now Dr. Zach mentioned something, you know, in the chat about the new religion will be science. But science is subjective too. What's, you know, what mind is it filtered through? You know, when you see some kind of hieroglyphics, you're filtering the interpretation through what you think you know.
Right.
But it may have nothing to do with what's real.
And, you know, I absolutely true, because we all, we need context. We need to have things that are relatable. If you don't know what the experience of being burned is like, how do you, can you possibly understand, you know, going through that? But it's universal, so we all know. We don't have to tell each other what it's like, because we've all been there. But, you know, when it comes to science, I think it is important to point out that while a lot of scientists are also materialists, that in itself is not science. Science is, you know, what do you know, and then everything else is a big maybe, right? And it's kind of looking at evidence and repeatable things, and it's a process. But, you know, to say that because we can't prove something is true means it's absolutely not true, I don't believe that's science. I believe that's a person's opinion that may call themselves a scientist.
Well, I think that it's, you know, again, we get into another area, particularly with metaphysics, because, you know, in the world that I come from and in my reality, that talking to spirits is a real thing, or at least having some other thing in the super consciousness that's tapped into wherever. So it doesn't matter how you see it, that we do, in fact, have an intuition and this other higher consciousness going on. And yet science would say, you know, that's just not, because it's not repeatable, it's not true. And religion would say that's evil. But now we're, you know, we talk about teleporting and we talk about astral traveling and we talk about consciousness right in science even. And there's a lot of scientific studies about, oh, you know, maybe it's not repeatable, but it's certainly something to it. And, you know, trying to get kind of delve into that, and I think, well, 50 years ago we were whack jobs, and now there's a term for it, like quantum entanglement. There's a term for it, and so science evolves, but we have this nasty habit of criticizing others when it doesn't fit into our view of reality, whether that's scientific or metaphysical or spiritual or in some other way. And that's the thing we have to address. So if we understand that, you know, fact versus opinion, and where is the right and wrong? Well, do right, you know, do harm, do no harm, do right, and understand that the right thing might be in the moment where you have to protect yourself. And if you can't run, you're going to fight back, and that's the right thing to do to survive. You don't want to cause harm, but if harm is being done to you, then you do what you have to. And that's where instinctually survivalists in that way. And but it doesn't mean we have an intent to harm.
Right.
We have an intent to protect. And so, again, that may be not, you know, fact versus opinion, except in the fact that we have these instinctual needs to survive when we're facing danger. You see, so that's where we can really start to peel away those layers to understand what it is to be human. I don't know, that's where I go with it. But again, it's the intricate details of who we are. So,
and, you know, it's intricate, doesn't even begin. It, Oh, it's complicated.
I know. Tabitha is saying in the chat that she wants to hear the quote that you were going to share last week, but Michael did that off the top of the show, Tabitha, because he actually went back and listened to all of last week's program, and he inserted that, which is, it's not a matter of black and white or gray, it's a matter of what's right or wrong. And so just to fill in the blanks here with Tabitha in the chat room.
Thank you. And, you know, I think the next logical place to come to this discussion, we talked about perspective, we talked about how nobody thinks they're the bad guy. You know, I think we also should reflect on the importance that emotion plays in determining what you think is right and wrong. You know, emotion versus intellect when it comes to morality. You know, we've all been in those moments where, you know, emotions are high, anger's high, and, you know, you feel something is right in the moment, but later when you cool down, you reflect and you realize that you were actually perhaps in the wrong, or that the situation is more complex than you originally gave it credit for.
You know, that is so huge what you just said, Michael. When emotions do our thinking for us, it's inevitably wrong. Because it's temporary, it's immediate gratification without any long-term understanding of what we are, because our emotions translate to an action, even if that's an energy that we project, which can be very harmful to others. But emotion does, we live in a very emotional world. And we need to be right in that moment. We need to be heard. We want to be validated. We want, you know, it's like that moment where, look, especially when I was young, I totally guilty of that. And where it inflames. And you can't think straight when you're that emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, you know, in a maturation process, we learn to say nothing good is going to come of this if I say anything at this moment, because I'm too emotional and I can't think straight. But that's a very hard thing for a lot of people to do. And that will affect their interpretation of what's right or wrong. Because they feel, most people feel, it's right that I can express my emotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was at work the other day, and as most of you know, I work as a patient ambassador, you know, at the hospital part-time. And you know, an anti-vaxxer comes in and is given this big speech, and I said, why are you telling me this? Well, I have a right, you know, to say freedom of expression. I have a right to tell what I need. I said, it doesn't matter here. You see, that need, he didn't like what I said in my response, but it's of no consequence to me what you're saying. It doesn't change anything. So you can vent all you want. You can say all your opinions that you want. It doesn't change anything. So, and that just got him more heated. But that's a perfect example of when somebody's running on emotion. And you can believe what you want, but when you inflame it, mm-hmm. and it infects others, and it's inappropriate in the timing, he's not thinking, what good will come of this?
Right.
He thinks he's teaching me something. You're not teaching me anything, and I got people behind you that need through. So, you know, I'm going to call security because we're not having this conversation.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's nothing in that. The right and the wrong of it, in my part, is your issues have nothing to do with me. It's got nothing to do with me. And I have a job to do. I'm doing my job. And you have to move over now. Who's next? And that inflames somebody even more, that you can be in that place of calm. So, again, my next point of this is when there are rational people in a highly fired up kind of, you know, environment, it can either do one of two things. It can calm people down, or it inflames them more because they feel like they're not heard.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody is going to be heard. And that's why we get in these, you know, really complex kinds of friction with others that can be quite dangerous, to be honest.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we also, if we're going to try to come to a point of understanding, we should look at You know, a lot of times we look at the behavior of human beings and, well, life in general a lot of times, but it doesn't have a lot of rational sense. But emotion has a logic unto itself. And just like you said, you know, he wanted attention, thought he was entitled to making his opinion known. But that is, you know, indicative of the human animal. We want attention, we want to, you know, express our views to change the culture. I mean, the culture war is hot and heavy right now across the world. And I think, you know, in his mind, he was fighting a little battle. Mm-hmm. And so for him, he was getting all those secondary gains out of it, right? Even though in a logical, rational sense, there was nothing to be gained by this, you know, there was an emotional payoff. And that emotion, tinted his view and perception of reality and made his action right in that moment.
Yeah, and that's, unfortunately, that's where a lot of right and wrong seems to be deciphered.
you
know, and if from that point of view. And, you know, my hope is that, you know, people can become a little calmer to begin to think straight and open their minds a little bit. And at the very least, be more respectful toward one another. You know, I read a meme the other day that stated something about respect is to be earned. And the response was, respect should be given and disrespect shown.
Mm-hmm.
Because we ought to be able to come from a place of looking at each other respectfully. And I thought, that was a really powerful statement, you know, that respect should just naturally be given.
Yeah.
And when you see a moment of disrespect, then you have your options for how you want to deal with that. But unfortunately, you know, we kind of, as the pendulum has swung, you know, you have to earn my respect. No. I'm not going to work that hard because I don't know what kind of respect you're looking for. And I think that's, you know, another kind of conversation but it does work into the right and wrong of it. You know, I think it comes, you need to earn my respect comes from a place of privilege and entitlement versus where, you know, Dr. Kelly would say, you know, give the benefit of the doubt until there's doubt.
Yep.
Which is equally the same thing.
And
so go ahead.
I just, you know, I've been thinking about on a couple of occasions, you know, the inner oracle card groundedness. And mm-hmm. part of that is, you know, having a defensible basis for your beliefs, being able to rationally point out, well, I can point to this, this, and this as concepts that support my position. And I think it would be a wonderful world if a lot more people applied that logic.
I agree. You know, it's been a great conversation. Mm-hmm. I think it's one that's needed, and certainly one that I appreciate in our little community here. And so I'm grateful for that, to be able to, you know, dissect this a little more and not necessarily come up with any conclusions, but that's the whole point, too. There is no final conclusion because we're also talking our opinions. But if we do consider to read the 9 principles of belief on occasion to bring us back to our groundedness, as you said, you know, Michael, then we can begin to integrate a view, a worldview of being equal, that we are all equal. And, you know, nobody is greater than myself, you know, but I'm not greater than anybody else either. We are different, but we're still equal. There was something that I asked people many years ago, you know, are you happy in your life? Do you find yourself interesting? You know, and these kinds of questions. And I went around and asked a whole bunch of people that time I had this list. And the responses I got was so fascinating. People would look at me like kind of stunned, saying, you know, Vicky, I don't think you've met enough interesting people. And I don't think, you know, nobody's happy. And what are you talking about? And it was all quite a negative. And my response is, nobody's more interesting to me than myself. I am fascinating to myself. I want to know how I think. I want to know how I respond. I want to know how I can improve. That is not being a narcissist. It's not being an egotist. In fact, it's very humbling.
Absolutely.
Nobody can live in here except me. And I ought to be interested in myself.
Yeah.
To improve myself in my humanity. And my evolution as a spiritual being, for certain, as a human being, but also coexisting with humanity. And so if I can kind of impart anything to wrap this topic up before we start drawing some cards, and anybody who wants their name drawn, please, or card drawn, put your name in the chat, is be interested in yourself. You know, like, really dig deep about, why did I say that? Why did I do that? You know, what is my response to this? And I know we can't kind of conclude how we would act in a certain situation because we haven't been there yet, you know. But it's reviewing ourselves and asking how we process, how we integrate new information. Does our ego get in the way of integrating more information? You know, what am I afraid of? What is it I really love to do? What's my passion? All those kinds of questions that make you a better human being. My opinion.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, famous quote, you know thyself. I'm pretty sure I came up with that.
Yeah.
But it's very true. How can we grow in our awareness without knowing ourselves? And how can we accurately judge what is right and what is moral without having increased awareness? So it's all part of the same process. But, you know, wonderful point. Well said, Dr. Vicky. And, you know, I'm glad we were able to finish this topic. I'm glad that we haven't had any power outages so far. And, you know, I'm looking forward to continuing these great discussions next week. But you're right. You know, it's that time of the evening.
It is. And we have names in the chat already. So for those who are joining us new, we certainly see a new name in the chat. Welcome, Dr. Melly. But also in the archives, Michael draws one of Dr. Kelly's inner oracle self-discovery cards, and I get a support card from the tarot, and we see if there's a message there.
And it's, you know, so interesting how often they just resonate. So, all right. So we have Deb first, if I'm not mistaken. And Deb, yeah. I have wild card number 9, blank. Yeah, good start. So I'm going to read from the Inner Oracle Guidebook to those that are new. And wild card number 9, blank. Drawing this card puts you on notice to dig deep within for the answers you seek. This card is what you want it to be. It is what you need it to be. It is all that you desire it to be. Remember that the unconscious mind speaks to you in the quietest of voices, in the loudest of ways, often overlooked. The universe is always on your side. Dig deep, for your answers lay within.
Well, Deb, I got for you the Page of Pentacles. Now, the Page is a communicator between the minor and major arcana. And in this case, it has to do with things, you know, whether that's money or, you know, just stuff. So how I kind of relate this blank with the support of, you know, the Page of Diamonds, I would say that you're maybe looking at a new career, a work move, or certainly something to do with encouraging new funds into your life. Like maybe there's being creative about money and having conversations about that. So the blank, I love the blank card because it really, it's an open book. It can be whatever you want it to be. So in my view, it's whatever you want to happen here, put your energy into it, and the universe will just unfold. I believe
that. I love that. And it's interesting, I just saw Wendy put in chat, Wendy, our card keeper that tracks these patterns. She said that Deb had this card on March 1st. Ooh. So, interesting recent repeat.
But. Oh, the blank card. Deb, you're recreating your life. It's awesome.
All right. And I'm going to say Dr. Melly is next. I saw that she put an I for the chat, I think, on the cards. And Dr. Melly, I have for you number 34 in the Service to Self and Others suit. Take and release ownership. Let's see. Ownership and entitlement are not the same. Ownership is taking responsibility with a healthy attitude. Entitlement is expecting more than what is earned. Further, codependence is taking on unhealthy ownership for other people's problems and feelings. This may be a time to reflect on owning only what is yours and releasing the rest.
Oh, this is really powerful, Melly, with the chariot. The chariot in and of itself is energy moving forward, and you really have a balance of positive and negative. But with the take and release ownership with the chariot, it's saying take your power back. Where do you want your life to go? And it's without inhibitions, without people pulling at you. You know, maybe you're taking on more responsibility of others than you should, or their opinion has been too important to you. And so this is about reclaiming that and moving forward empowered. You know, it's empowering yourself to be you and following the path that you know is right for you. Now, my disclaimer in that is if you have a family and you're taking care of children, we all have to be, you know, realistic that we have to give provisions to everybody. So you can't just, oh, I'm just going to, you know, up and move to, you know, the Bahamas or something. It's a matter of following a passion and putting your life in a direction that feels better for you. So that's what I want to say in this. It's a really good message.
I like it. Good message indeed. All right, we have Tabitha next. And I really love this. I was just shuffling the cards, and groundedness fell out while I was shuffling. And I thought, oh, that's perfect. I was just mentioning that earlier. So Tabitha, for you, I have number 37, groundedness. Remain grounded by looking for evidence that supports or refutes claims or beliefs. Have a compelling and defensible basis for your beliefs, especially esoteric beliefs. An absence or denial of evidence does not assure a truthful conclusion. Be willing to examine beliefs, assumptions, and opinions and weigh them against facts. Suspend judgment until you have considered all of the facts or have more facts to uncover. Adjust opinions when new facts are found.
Well, Tabitha, I got the Ace of Hearts, and I really love that. It's really about attaining a higher level of passion and affection and love, really. Groundedness with the Ace of Hearts. My first response to that is, how do we want love to act? How do we decide love to act? You know, we sometimes take for granted that love is love and, you know, everything's in a loving way. But I think we decide how love acts. We know how we feel, but our actions need to support that. So you might be at this time kind of deciphering maybe some dysfunctions of some people around you, that maybe their love isn't displayed in a good way, so to speak. So it's just having a think about it. And I'm not saying necessarily it's dramatized to an event, but rather an introspection and maybe finding a new way of viewing love from your perspective.
Ooh.
That's what I feel there.
Very interesting. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. We have Jamil next, and I have number 40, another card in the life skill suit, relationships. Healthy relationships are interdependent and win-win. They are not dependent or codependent. Accept others for who they are and not for what they believe. Don't be judgmental. Otherwise, end the relationship, regardless of who it is with. For healthy relationships, we must add more than we subtract. This card can refer to a healthy or toxic relationship, or to the relationship of one thing to another.
Well, I have the Eight of Diamonds in support of that. And, you know, I think you're learning as you go. Usually, the Eight of Diamonds is about apprenticeship, on-the-job training, you know, being inventive, creative, and inspiring. But when relationships is the, you know, the preface, it's maybe setting new ground rules, kind of, or at least for yourself, and understanding how they play into relationships and not losing yourself in a relationship. So it's kind of a rediscovery process, if you will. And I feel it's really optimistic. It's really positive. but it's, you know, kind of like, Michael, you've learned some lessons, but now you have to go practice it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the toughest part.
Yeah, and so putting things into play. And in this case, I feel really encouraging that it's hopeful and can lead to great places, really.
All right. All right. Love it. And we have Wendy next, card keeper herself. Thank you so much for what you do, Wendy. And for you, I have number 43, another card in the life skill suit, and sequential, too. That's interesting. All right. Well, not quite sequential, but, you know, higher than the previous. Regardless, expediency. Timing is everything. Some things call for expediency. Others require us to slow down. If you have a problem, you can take care of it now or suffer longer and still take care of it later. It takes courage to face important matters when timing and opportunity avails, and wisdom to know when to slow down to assess the correct actions before acting promptly. For success in anything, do what you should do when you should do it.
Well, I have the Seven of Hearts in support of that, Wendy, which is really kind of a contradiction in a way. Seven of Hearts is about learning the difference between illusion and fantasy versus reality and potential dreams that we can manifest. And so when you have expediency with that Seven of Hearts, it might be using your intuition to know when to move forward really quickly and when to step back and to observe what's real and what's not real. And this might be about a work situation. It might be about, you know, dealing with people. As the first thought that comes to mind is, don't believe everything you hear. It's use your instincts and your intuition to know that there might be more behind the words. So stepping back and watching how the action supports the words is going to be, you know, what you need to know. So I think that you're on your game. Know when to move forward, know when to step back. I think it's a good message. I think you already know that, Wendy. It's just a support, you know, kind of we're just affirming.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I can't tell you how many times I hear something that I already know, but I needed to hear it again. So hopefully this is one of those events. All right, and our final card of the evening, if I'm not mistaken, is Zach Smith.
Yeah.
And I have pulled, oddly enough, another cardinal life skill suit. This one is directly sequential. It's number 44, Attitude and Disposition. A lot of life skills cards mm-hmm. tonight. All right. Enthusiasm and or an agreeable disposition, along with good manners, assures individual happiness that inevitably influences others. Drawing this card may indicate a time to review a change in attitude regarding someone or something in your life. This can be positive or negative. Be proactive and ask yourself, how hard can it be? And a can-do attitude makes it happen.
Well, I got the Ten of Diamonds in support of that, Zach Smith. That has everything to do with the marketplace, has everything to do with value for value, exchange, bartering. So I'm going to take this into the work scenario. And attitude disposition is, you know, sometimes there can be an event in a workplace where things are a little bit inflamed. And that's usually when I go calm, because I think, something's up here. It's not always what it seems to be. And there's always something behind it. But I want to say here, I think that with a good attitude and a disposition that you have, Zach, that you're going to be recognized as separate from the group. And I think there's opportunity coming for you for that very reason. So if you're not buying into the group, then you're showing a skill that the others may not have. So keep that in mind when things are stirring around you. Well, I don't know where that came from, Michael, but
interesting, though.
It is. It is for sure. As we've been talking, something I've certainly been thinking about in the last few weeks especially is how we go through chapters of life. And I can certainly, in retrospect, see these, you know, chapters of my life. And, you know, I did that for 10 years, this for 20 years, you know, and but it was also woven in with other things. And, of course, this is a huge chapter, having, you know, now been with with the school and Dr. Kelly for all these years and doing this program with you, Michael. But I've also done other things, filtering, so have you. Life has changed. You know, that chapter of when you're living in a motorhome, saving money to buy a house, then you bought a house. You know, and so there's these chapters. And I would like to talk about that next week, you know, if you're up for that, and how we can learn a resilience to how things change. And because letting some of the past go, there's always some grieving that comes with that. And, you know, so how we segue through chapters of life.
You know, I think it's a great topic. Yeah, let's do it.
And the skills that are needed for that.
I'm all for it. You got my vote. All right. Well, that brings us to kind of the end of our evening tonight. And, you know, I'm just so thankful that we get this opportunity to come together. I appreciate everybody that joins us. And, you know, this has just been especially fun topic for me. I always love digging into ethics and right and wrong. And there's so many variables. I mean, and we could just go on and on and on, too, about this topic. I think it largely comes down to what is it that we're here for. We're here to expand our awareness and understand the world around us, and that largely is, you know, what is right and what is wrong. What are the, you know, code of ethics that we're going to govern ourselves by? So thank you for joining us. Thank you, Dr. Vicky, and everybody that contributed in chat. Dr. Vicky, any last thoughts before we wrap up?
Yeah, don't let them push you around out there, people.
Gosh darn it. That's,
you know,
darn tootin'.
It's like, live your best life and, you know, really chill out when the guy who's driving cuts you off in traffic, or, you know, somebody wants that parking space. Let them have it. Don't sweat the small stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know? Absolutely.
Just have a good life.
Can't say it better than that. So have a good life and just make that your daily goal. Enjoy it. We only have so much. Until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.